My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, the more MQLs, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
The best conversations I have with my colleagues are the ones that happen when no one is looking, when we're not 100% sure yet what to write.
Hopefully, having conversations like this can help you figure out your own point of view. That's kind of our job as Washington Post opinions columnists. I'm Charles Lane, Deputy Opinion Editor.
And I'm Amanda Ripley, a contributing columnist. We're going to bring you into these conversations on a new podcast called Impromptu.
Follow Impromptu now, wherever you listen.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and every body. The weather is getting warmer, and it's time to swap my winter layers for fun, vibrant, and cool clothing. With so many fun things happening this spring, like Mother's Day and the Wind Down Tour, it's hard to find great-looking clothes that fit you just right. That's why I love JCPenney. JCPenney has so many stylish and comfortable options for so many different body types. I've been blown away by their selection, and everything hugs my body in all the right spots. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with style that gets you. Something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.
Hello and welcome to another episode of The Mark Moss Show, where we talk about the decentralized revolution. Of course, each and every week, we're talking about the way the world is changing. And if you don't realize that, I don't know what you're paying attention to. The world we're going into is not the same as the world we are leaving behind. And of course, we look at it through the lens of politics, finance, and technology. I've tried to find the convergence of those three things to find the signal in the noise. Of course, we look at the technology being Bitcoin, the decentralized technology. This cryptocurrency movement is changing the world. And so we take a look at that. And really, have you ever heard the saying that money makes the world go round? I'm sure you have. And that's exactly what it really is. It's all about the money. If you watch any of these murder mysteries on TV, these crime series, it'd always be like, follow the money, right? Or you want to follow like who has motive or incentive. And typically incentives are driven by economics, by money. And so really it's always the money that makes the world go round, which is why I like to look at the intersection of the finance and then how the political system works to kind of manage or manipulate or control the financial system, but then as technology is changing that. And so one of the things that I like to track is the changing of the monetary system and how that changes. And as the monetary system changes, then the political system changes. Now, what changes the monetary system? There's lots of different things that can change it. So for example, in Zimbabwe, they've changed their monetary system multiple times because they continue to mismanage it. They continue to manipulate it. So in Zimbabwe, they've ruined their currency, I think, five times in the last dozen or so years. And it's because they create too much of it, inflation. Inflation is increasing the money supply. So they start out with the Zimbabwe dollar pegged one-to-one to the US dollar. But because they print so many of those Zimbabwe dollars that now it's 2-to-1 and then 5-to-1 to the US and then 100-to-1 and then 500-to-1 and then 5,000-to-1 and then a quadrillion-to-1 until everyone in the country is a billionaire and it's $350 billion just for one single egg. And it starts spiraling out of control. It's gradually then suddenly. So first it's 1-to-1, then 2-to-1, then 5-to-1, then 10-to-1. And it's still not that bad. but then it's 1,000 to 1 and then 1,000,000 to 1 and then 1,000,000,000 to 1 and then 1,000,000,000,000 to 1 and then it's gone, right? And so through that mismanagement, that monetary system changed. And then, of course, Zimbabwe tries again, and they peg again to the dollar, 1 to 1, and then it's 1,000,000,000,000 to 1 again, and they try again, and then they fail again. And then they say, oh, okay, we just won't have a monetary system. We'll just use the dollar. But then after a couple of years, why don't we give it a try again? And they try it again, and now they went back to 1 to 1 with the dollar, and now they're at like 500 to 1 to the dollar. So they just can't seem to learn their lesson. So a lot of times it's done through mismanagement, through manipulation, through fraud, or whatever it may be. I think most things, maybe this is my own, well, it certainly is my own internal bias. I just believe most people are good. So I think, you know, they probably had good intentions. They need a little bit more money for whatever social program that may be. Hey, we need to feed the poor, right? Or, hey, we have this emergency we have to take care of. So let's just print a little bit more currency. We didn't do it out of bad reason. We did it out of good reason. Let's help the poor. And everybody's for feeding the poor, right? But by creating more money, you set this whole chain of events off. And so anyway, that's what happens. There's ways to do it. But also other ways that can change. Of course, maybe it starts with good intentions, then it goes into fraud, where now it's like, well, if I print a bunch more money and give it to these types of programs, like we're going to build these schools, but through building these schools, I can put a bunch of that money in my pocket. I can give it to all my buddies who are in the construction industry. Then it starts going into fraud. And of course, that's kind of where we're at with the entire global system. But another way that it changes is through political situations. So for example, since 1944, most of the world agreed to be on a dollar standard, a reserve standard of the world. And most of it's been that way. Now, a lot of people in the world don't want to be on the dollar standard anymore. Like Russia, for example, like China. And so that could change the monetary system, which I want to talk about. And then there's technology. So money's communication. Money communicates value. Money allows me to get the goods and services that I want, and I use money as that medium of exchange to get me that. And we haven't really seen any technological upgrades to money. So we see that the way that we get music has changed. I used to need a 100-person orchestra to listen to Beethoven, and then I could get it in a record, and then in an 8-track, and then a cassette, and a CD, and now it's just streaming. And so technology changed the way that we get music, and now it's just streaming, and I don't even own CDs anymore. It just streams off my phone, and it changed books, right? We used to have to go to a library, and now I can get any book I want, almost probably for free, most of them, just online, movies, etc. But what about the money? The money hasn't changed. As a matter of fact, our credit card system that we still use today, our debit card, ACH credit card system, I believe was created about 100 years ago, right? I think Diner's card was the very first credit card. And it's very archaic. It's very archaic. When you go to the store and you give them your credit card or your debit card, it literally makes a phone call, right? It makes that noise and it has to connect. And it has to connect with that one bank and has to connect with another bank. And does this person have an account? And is there money? And it takes all this time. And so then maybe it's, I don't know, 30, 45 seconds while you're standing there at the counter. But then that merchant doesn't typically get their money for, you know, well, then it batches at the end of the day. So at the end of the day, then all the transactions for the day get batched, and then they run it, and it could take 3 to 5 days for the merchant to actually get that money. So 3 to 5 days for debit cards, credit cards. Everyone says, oh, Visa's so fast. That system's 100 years old and it hasn't been upgraded. So technology can change monetary systems. Let's talk about a couple of those things. So the dollar. The dollar's been the reserve currency of the world, 1944, Bretton Woods Agreement. Everyone agreed to use the dollar. But things change, like the Zimbabwe situation I gave. So if you look at the dollar, what happened? Well, 1913, the creation of the Federal Reserve. And the Federal Reserve started creating paper claims to gold. But the problem was that by 1913 and 1918 and 1922 and 1925 and 1928 and 1930, they printed way too many of these paper gold claims, and there wasn't enough gold to back it up. Now, at the time, all the gold was in the banks because gold's too big and heavy and clunky to move around. It's much easier to use these paper gold certificates. And by 1933, they said, shoot, we owe a bunch of gold, but we don't have gold. And we can't just create gold from thin air. So let's just take it from everybody and we'll just seize the gold. Act 6102, Executive Order 6102, 1933, the U.S. government seized everybody's gold. Then they recapitalized everything. Then they started printing too many gold certificates. 1944 put the whole world on this gold system. By 1971, they had again printed way too many of these paper gold certificates. Sounds sort of like Zimbabwe, doesn't it? They created way too many of these paper gold certificates, and all these countries like France sent their warships over and said, "We don't want these paper gold certificates. Give us the gold." And President Richard Nixon said, "Shh, nope. You're not getting the gold anymore. We're seizing your gold." So 1933, they took the American people's gold. 1971, they took the world's gold because they printed too much money, too many paper gold certificates, just like Zimbabwe. Sound familiar? All right. Now, here we are. The dollar's still the reserve currency of the world. But fast forwarding, something I've been talking about all the time, the decentralized revolution, the world is decentralizing. So the world has been on a path of centralization, of centralizing. And so, you know, the UN heading all things up and the World Economic Forum and the World Health Organization, right? And the IMF, right? And all of these treaties, NATO, right? And so the whole world's been kind of working together globally. We have this global reserve currency, but that's all changing. Now the world is decentralizing. Now the world is moving into this protectionist era where it's almost every nation out for themselves. And when every nation starts looking out for themselves, they have to start thinking about their own resources. What resource do I have? I have to protect my resources. I have to protect my security. And I need to protect my money because my money is what gives me the security and allows me to get the resources. And if we're just all on the dollar standard, I don't have any control there. And Russia found out the hard way. One of three global superpowers with nuclear weapons, they had their bank accounts frozen. Just like the truckers in Canada got their bank account frozen, just like you get your bank account frozen, they got their bank account frozen. Over $600 million in FX reserves were seized. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Mark Moss Show. We're talking about the decentralized revolution, the way the money system is changing. I got a lot more to cover when I come back. Don't go away. I'm going to be right back.
AI might be the most important new computer technology ever. It's storming every industry, and literally billions of dollars are being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? It's time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud. Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. OCI has 4 to 8 times the bandwidth of other clouds, offers one consistent price instead of variable regional pricing, and of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. So now you can train your AI models at twice the speed and less than half the cost of other clouds. If you want to do more and spend less like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic, take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/strategic. That's oracle.com/strategic. oracle.com/strategic.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, "The more MQLs, the better," over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Class is in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
All right, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Mark Moss Show. We're talking about the way the monetary system is changing and how the whole world is changing because of that. And I was kind of walking you through the history of the monetary system a little bit. If you missed any of that, don't worry. I got your back. You can check me out on the podcast. Just go to your favorite podcast players, just search Mark Moss, or on YouTube on the Market Disruptors YouTube channel. You can find me there as well. And you can watch me and listen to me there if you missed any of this. Okay, so moving forward, now we have the situation where the world is breaking apart. We're in a decentralized revolution, which is what I talk about every week. And now each of these nations are kind of moving out on their own. They realize that the United States and the dollar payment system, or I should say the dollar payment network, more than anything, the dollar is a payment network. It's a way to move money around the world almost instantaneously, and it works pretty good. It's archaic, but you know, it still works pretty good, especially for the U.S. government. But if you're on the wrong end of that, like Russia, for example, then you get sanctions, and you get your bank accounts seized and frozen. And if you're not a top three global superpower with nuclear weapons, what chance do you have? And the answer is none. And so the world's starting to break apart. And we saw this week that Russia claims the Bank of China in talks to challenge the U.S. reserve currency status. That's a big news. Big news this week. And we can see that Russian officials want China's help in developing an international payment system that would allow Moscow and Beijing to undermine the global primacy of the U.S. dollar. Russian Deputy Prime Minister Alexander Novak said, "Such work makes it possible to prevent risks and promote the transition of the ruble and yuan into the status of world reserve currencies," end quote. And so what he's saying is it makes it possible to prevent risks. What risks? What risks are they using the dollar system? Oh, the one where they seize all your money, that risk. Oh, the other risk where you're not allowed to join it or you get kicked out of it. So any country that gets sanctioned, like Iran, for example, and I'm not saying they're a good country and I'm not saying that they don't deserve to be sanctioned. That's a different topic for a whole different day. My point is what risk is he talking about? Makes it possible to prevent risk. What risks? The risk of one, not being able to freely trade with other countries, or two, being, you know, by not being allowed to use it or being kicked out of it, or two, having your money taken. That's a big risk. Wouldn't you agree? And so, of course, if Russia doesn't stand a chance, then no other country stands a chance. And so China sits back and watches the story and goes, shoot, we didn't really think about that. Like, man, if Russia takes Ukraine and the world just moves to shut them out of the banking system and take their money, what happens if China over here, we want to go take Taiwan? What could happen? Well, we better start, I like to say all the time in business, dig your well before you're thirsty. Don't wait until you're thirsty. Start digging before you're thirsty. And so maybe China's like, well, shoot, we should probably build up another system before it's our turn to get kicked out like Russia, like what happened to Russia. And that's exactly what it looks like it's happening here. It says that they're aligned in their mutual ambition to degrade Western power. In this regard, the Central Bank of Russia and the Bank of China are working on the possibility of opening accounts for Russian companies in China, Chinese companies in Russia, and creating a payment system without using SWIFT, Novak said. So SWIFT is the monetary system that moves money around the world. And so they want to create an alternative to that. And of course, Russia is kind of, I don't know if I want to say, leading the charge in these BRICS nations. So it's Brazil, Russia, India, China, South America. Of course, now we're seeing Argentina. We're seeing now even Saudi Arabia saying they want to join the BRICS, which make up about 60% of the people in the world. So if they set up this other system, it makes sense that 60% of the world could move on to that system. It says dozens of foreign financial institutions joined Moscow's alternative payment system this year. A Russian central bank said in September, but the number is still dwarfed by the thousands of entities that rely on SWIFT. So dozens have jumped onto the new alternative that Moscow, that Russia has already set up. But dozens. Dozens is small compared to thousands, obviously. It says here, quote, "The U.S. needs to mend its ways, stop politicizing and weaponizing economic trade and sci-tech issues, and provide a fair, just, and non-discriminatory business environment for foreign companies, including for those in China," said China Foreign Minister spokesman Zhao Lijian. So this is a problem. And it's not an easy problem to dissect, and we could spend a lot of time talking about this. But basically, you have problems, potential problems like terrorism, right? If a nation is hostile to the United States, should we allow them to have that money that makes them more hostile? These are very tricky issues. There's no good answers for this. But money should be a tool. And so tools can be used for good and bad. And money should be a tool, and it should not be political. Now, I guess if you control the money, then you want to control some of the interests of that. And that's exactly the situation the U.S. is in. The problem is, as the United States continues to get more, as they continue to weaponize the dollar more, they're just going to have more and more people wanting to go move to a different system. And so anyway, that's big development. And we'll have to see how that plays out. Now, we can also see that the war against the dollar and the dollar payment network as we know it is not dying down. It's only continuing to escalate on top of these new payment networks being set up. So again, they want to replace SWIFT, which is old technology, but they're probably going to set up with another old technology. But remember, technology is also what changes things, and so we have that. And so we have the era of the CBDC, or the central bank digital currencies, that are coming out. And that is a payment upgrade. And we can see that's happening. We see India is rolling out their retail pilot program for a digital rupee. So that's big. Now, we already talked about the Federal Reserve wants to launch a 12-week pilot program in partnership with a bunch of other commercial banks to test out their own CBDC here in the United States. But the U.S. isn't alone. Right? Almost every country is working on a digital currency. India is working on developing a digital rupee and recently announced the second phase of its testing. So they're already going. They've already run a successful pilot test program at the wholesale level, sort of like what the central bank is doing at the wholesale level, like at the banks. And now the Reserve Bank of India, the RBI, announced it will test the digital rupee in a retail setting. So the U.S. is testing it with banks, which India already did. And now India is going to roll it out to retail. According to the RBI, the central bank digital currency is a legal tender issued by a central bank in digital form. It's the same as fiat currency and is exchangeable one-to-one with the fiat currency, only its form is different. It's digital. So what's happening? The thing is that as this happens, as people start to change from one monetary system they've always known their whole life, into another, then it opens up their minds to, well, what other systems are out there, right? Once you realize there's a problem with one, well, then you start looking at all your available options for something new. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Mark Maugh Show. We're talking about, of course, the decentralized revolution. We're talking about the way the monetary system is changing right before our very eyes. It's not just happening in Russia, China. It's also happening in Europe. I got a lot more to cover when I come back. You don't want to miss it. Don't go away. I'll be right back.
The best conversations I have with my colleagues are the ones that happen when no one is looking, when we're not 100% sure yet what to write.
Hopefully, having conversations like this can help you figure out your own point of view. That's kind of our job as Washington Post opinions columnists. I'm Charles Lane, Deputy Opinion Editor.
And I'm Amanda Ripley, a contributing columnist. We're going to bring you into these conversations on a new podcast called Impromptu.
Follow Impromptu now, wherever you listen.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. Give yourself a delicious escape from the afternoon with the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as life continues to fly by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
All right, welcome back. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Mark Maugh Show. We're talking about the decentralized revolution. We're talking about the way the world is breaking apart, and it's really being broken apart by the monetary system is breaking apart. The dollar hegemony, the dollar world reserve status is being challenged. Lots of challengers. Like I said, when one... system that you've always known your whole life, and maybe you've never even thought about it, when it starts to change and you're looking for something new, well, then you go look at all your options. You've been driving the same car for 5 years or 10 years or however long you've been driving your car for. But when you decide that you want to look at a new car, well, you're going to go look at all your options. So if I'm going to leave one financial system that I'm in now, one thing that I've always known to be money, and now money is going to be something different, then I want to look at all my options for that. Now it says here, digital currencies are similar to Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies. They exist as virtual banknotes or coins held in a digital wallet. The difference between a government digital currency and Bitcoin is the value of the digital currency is backed or is controlled by the state. So it's just like any fiat currency. So as the RBI, the Reserve Bank of India, put it, according to them, unlike cryptocurrencies, a CBDC isn't a commodity or claims on commodities or digital assets. Cryptocurrencies have no issuer. They are not money, certainly not currency, as the world has come to be understood historically. I have a little bit of pushback on that statement. Now, they are not money as the world, as the word has come to be understood historically. So what is money and what has it been understood historically? I think most people think about money as, you know, the dollars in their either their wallet they carry around, or most people are digital. So the money, the digits you see in your bank account. So money is typically being used as a medium of exchange to buy and sell goods, right? If you want food, or you want a vacation, or you want something else, you're going to use your money in order to get that. A medium of exchange is simple. And so in regards to that, lots of things can be medium of exchange. So I might exchange my labor. Might be one thing that I might exchange, right? So I think as the word has been understood historically, money being a medium of exchange. Now it says the first part said that a CBDC isn't a commodity or claims on commodities. So gold is considered a commodity. What's the difference? Well, a commodity and all money up until the fiat era that we started 50 years ago has been commodity money. So a commodity is basically, typically it's been historically been something that comes from the ground that anybody could get anywhere in the world and would be fungible. So I can get a piece of land and I can mine for gold in California or Mexico or China. Anyone can go get the land and can dig for the gold. And no matter if I get it from China or Mexico or California, it's still gold. Gold is gold. Same with oil. I can go drill for oil in California. I can go drill for gold in Saudi Arabia. I can go drill for gold in I don't know, Venezuela. Whoever gets the land, they can drill for the gold or for the oil. If they get the oil, it's fungible. Oil's oil, right? Wheat. I can grow wheat. Same thing. And so gold has been a commodity. Now, all money has been commodity. So lots of things have been money throughout history. So rocks and feathers and seashells, et cetera. And those are commodities. Those are natural, right? We can go collect them. There's no central issuer. Nobody creates oil. Nobody creates seashells, right? Nature, that's natural. So those are commodities. And so all of history has been commodities are money. Fiat, we started the fiat system about 50 years ago. And there's no commodity. They just create this paper gold certificate and they just say it's money because it's money. So it's the first money that we've had. So it says here, unlike cryptocurrencies, a CBDC isn't a commodity or claims on commodities. It's fiat currency. It says here, cryptocurrencies have no issuer. They are not money. Well, out of the approximately 22,000 cryptocurrencies, of the 22,000, I believe 21,995 of them have had an issuer. So it's a company like Ethereum and a group of guys like Vitalik Buterin get together, form the Ethereum Foundation. They create this software and they create a bunch of tokens, 70% of them, and then they start selling them off. So Ethereum did have an issuer and Cardano did have an issuer and XYZ cryptocurrency BNB token had an issuer. So it's a little bit wrong there. The RBI doesn't quite understand that. Cryptocurrencies do have an issuer. Now, Bitcoin doesn't have an issuer. Bitcoin is like a commodity, meaning there is no issuer. There was a piece of software that was created and anybody anywhere in the world can get a computer, connect to the Bitcoin network and could mine Bitcoin. Anybody can do it. And no matter where you mine for the Bitcoin, just like gold, anywhere in the world, one Bitcoin is worth one Bitcoin. It's fungible. So Bitcoin fits into that. But the part that they're saying here, that they're not money, cryptocurrencies have no issuer, they're not money, are not currency. So what's the difference of currency and money? A lot of people, if you're Mike Maloney fans, you love to hit on this point right here. Dollars are not money, they're currency. Only gold is money. JP Morgan's famous statement in front of Congress was that gold is money, nothing else. And that's true. Gold had been money for 5,000 years. But if you look at what money is, it has basically a couple attributes, and one will be a store of value, two, medium of exchange, and three, a unit of account. And so a store of value, I would park my wealth there until I'm ready to use it to exchange for other goods. Medium of exchange, of course, we've already talked about that. And then finally, the unit of account. How do I measure the value of other things? Well, one cow is worth 13 chickens. One cow is worth, 7 liters of gasoline, and it's really hard to start trying to compare all these things against other things. So we just use one medium of exchange and a unit of account, call it dollars, or whatever country you're in, you can fill in the blank there. But money, or what we call money, dollars, really they're more currency. Currency is a really good medium of exchange, but it's a horrible store of value and so forth. So anyway, that's a long story to say that the central bank digital currencies are coming. They are not like other cryptocurrencies. They're not, certainly not like Bitcoin. Certainly not that has been open and open source. Everyone can see it and everyone has equal opportunity to mine it and use it, etc. Now, it says here that the National Payments Corporation of India will host the platform for the digital rupee payment system during the testing phase. They're going to give each commercial bank in the pilot 50,000 a rupee, enough for 50,000 users. So we'll see what happens. Now, of course, they're trying this in other places. We know in Africa, they've been trying to use it. The e-Naira, they call it. Nobody wants to use it. They say, why would I? The regular Naira is horrible. Why would I use the e version of it? You haven't fixed any of the problems. The problems are because you create too much of it. So just like you've destroyed the regular Naira, why would I use the e-Naira? Because it's more convenient? It doesn't make any sense. And I think that that's exactly what's going to happen. People are just going to go, look, it's the exact same thing. I think it's going to push more people into Bitcoin because I think once people start using this kind of digital token as money, it starts to kind of legitimize it, they're going to go, wait a minute. Why does this e-rupee or e-Naira or e-dollar, why does it continue to go down in value compared to other goods and services? But this Bitcoin over here, whatever this Bitcoin thing is, it continues to go up in terms of goods and services. And now that I'm using these token things and I have all these different options of all these different tokens, why wouldn't I use the one that seems to go up in value more? And why wouldn't I use the one that I can control instead of having one like in China where they just turn it on and off as they want? It says, China's goal is not to make payments more convenient, but to replace cash so it can keep closer tabs on people than it already does. Who wants that? And so when you're moving into this new monetary system and you can evaluate these different choices, I think the answer is going to be pretty clear here. And I think the answer is you're going to want to use Bitcoin, not this CBDC or e-currency or whatever it's going to be. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Mark Moss Show. We're talking about the decentralized revolution, the way the world is breaking apart, the way the money system is changing. And we're looking at the signs of this. I got a lot more news to go over this week, including what the ECB, the European Central Bank, just said this week, a pretty big deal, and some big shakeup in the cryptocurrency market cap from Coinbase. I got a lot to cover when I come back. Don't go away. I'll be right back.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. Give yourself a delicious escape from the afternoon with the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as life continues to fly by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. All right. Welcome back. You're listening to The Mark Moss Show. We're talking about the decentralized revolution. We're breaking down some of the news stories and showing you how money as we know it around the world is changing really, really, really fast. Now, some of the things that are happening, of course, like when the United States freezes truckers' bank accounts, or I'm sorry, not the United States, but in Canada, froze truckers' accounts, or when the U.S. decided to freeze Russia's account, they're kicking people out of the system. What I like to say is that they're doing Bitcoin's marketing for them. In the United States specifically, a lot of people still want to know, why do we need things like cryptocurrencies? It makes no sense. Like, our dollars work pretty good, and I got PayPal, and I got Venmo, and I got Cash App, and what do I need all that for? Now, if you're one of 3 billion people in the world that live under really harsh authoritarian regimes with double or triple-digit inflation, you don't ask that question. You realize that your money is so ruined that you need any alternative you can get. If you're in Turkey watching your currency lose 80, 90%, you're in Venezuela or Argentina watching your money lose 1,000% of its purchasing power, you're trying to get out of that as fast as you possibly can. If you're in North Korea, we're not even allowed to have money, and the government comes to your house regularly searching if you've stashed anything that they can steal from you, you realize why you need it. But if you're in the United States, you don't really get it. You know, our inflation is bad, you know, 8%, it's not that bad, you know. You know, I'm only losing half my money every 18 years. I mean, that's not too bad, right? Think about that. If you put $100,000 in the bank and you had a baby, and you put that $100,000 in the bank for your baby, by the time your baby was 18 years old and you want to give them that money, it's only going to buy you about $50,000 worth of goods and services. But that's not that bad compared to what the rest of the world has. So people are like, well, what do I need the money for? But the more that the governments try to crack down on these things, the more they highlight why we need alternatives. Interesting enough, this week I saw this article that the IRS is now requiring PayPal and Venmo to report users earning over $600. How dare they? How dare these users use that? What was this? I was looking for this article I read this week. I didn't have it prepared. I just thought about it right here. Here we go. Okay, so this is great. I should have thought about this earlier. So this article comes out here. It says that the IRS now requires PayPal, Venmo to report users earning over $600. The American Rescue Plan Act of 2021 lowered the reporting threshold for third-party networks process payments. So if you use one of those payment networks and you use $600, then the government, the U.S. government wants to come and shine a flashlight up your butt, and they want to know everything about what you're doing. The IRS posted this on the IRS website titled, "Get Ready Now to File Your Federal Income Tax Returns," and they warn taxpayers that even a single transaction exceeding $600 could trigger an audit for you. Wow. A single transaction over $600 could trigger an audit for you. Now, don't think they won't. Especially if you're on the wrong side of the aisle from what they want you to be. You know, if you've been, you know, saying anything they don't agree with online, or you vote in the opposite political party that has power right now, you could be a target. And if you think I am exaggerating, just go back and look what happened when Obama was president and how he weaponized the IRS against the Tea Party. All right. So if you think I'm being hyperbolic, just go look at that. There's history for that. And what we can see here is that this is part of the Biden administration's this whole policy they put together, and the 87,000 new agents that they've hired as a result of the Inflation Reduction act. So they raised a bunch of money. They hired 87,000 new agents to go do what? To go do audits. And as they say on their own website, if you fail to even report one single transaction of over $600, they're going to come knock on your door. Now, $600. If you're doing transactions $600, like, do you have the money and the time to even deal with an audit? Do you know what that does to your life? I mean, I have friends that have gone through audits where their whole life has been turned upside down. $600. And the same week I saw this article here, the Pentagon fails its fifth annual audit in a row. Fails its audit fifth year in a row. So the Pentagon, the U.S. Department of Defense, can't even get through an audit. But you, with your $600, are going to be facing one. It says here, the U.S. Department of Defense has once again failed a comprehensive financial audit. The audit is the fifth comprehensive review the department has completed, and the fifth where auditors were unable to find sufficient record keeping for the DOD to pass off on a clean audit. So that they can't even get through it. Now, what does it say here? I was trying to find the numbers here. Oh, here. Yeah. It's only $3.7 trillion they can't account for. That's what the number here. $3.7 trillion. No big deal. We'll just let them slide on that. But you with your $600, we're going to come after you. You know, you can tell a lot about the status of a nation by how they prosecute crimes. How do they prosecute crimes against the people? And how do they prosecute crimes against themselves? So, what do I mean by that? Well, let's see. If you're Sam Bankman-Fried and you defrauded millions of Americans out of $10 billion, millions of Americans potentially have lost everything, every single penny. Probably people will be taking their own lives over this, I would guess. Not only are you still walking around free, you're being asked to come speak on the same stage as the Treasury Secretary, Janet Yellen, the same stage as Larry Fink, the head of BlackRock, the largest asset manager in the world. Not only are you still free, you're being celebrated. When you stole from millions of Americans, billions of dollars, no problem. But if you're, somebody else, say like Julian Assange, who shared a piece of information from a reporter, which is protected under our laws, you're hunted down and extradited and you're put away with no recourse. Or you're Ross Ulbricht, who created an internet website that people bought and sold things on, and some people bought drugs on that website, and you're serving four consecutive life sentences because you created a website that people bought drugs off of. Now, I am saying, I think drugs should be illegal. I think it's insane that they're illegal. I think the war on drugs is a complete failure. Since 1971, since the DEA was founded, we've spent trillions of dollars on drugs, and it's only a bigger problem today than it's ever been. We've made these drug cartels enormously rich, and now they're so powerful that they're more powerful than some of the militaries in Mexico and Central America. They have more advanced weaponry, and they're creating war zones along the U.S. borders. How did they get there? How did they get so much money? Oh, the war on drugs. If drugs were legal, we'd never have that problem. The number one cause of death in the U.S. for, I believe, 18 to 35-year-olds is fentanyl. Why are people dying of fentanyl? Well, because they're buying drugs off the street. If drugs were legal, we wouldn't have that problem. But if you create a website and people bought drugs for life sentences, you'd steal millions of people's money. Well, we'll celebrate you. And that's exactly what we're talking about here. $600, you fail to claim one single transaction of $600, and these 87,000 new agents are coming for you. But if you're the Pentagon, and you just misplaced $3.5 trillion, and you failed your fifth audit in a row, no big deal. And the point that I was trying to make before I went on that long rant is, as they continue to squeeze people more, people will be forced to go find other systems. They'll be getting out of the dollar system just like Russia is, just like India is, just like China is. and other people will as well. They don't want to stay in the central bank digital currency fiat money system where they can seize everything. They're going to go find a new alternative system, and I believe that's Bitcoin. If you just tune in, you're listening to The Mark Moss Show. We're talking about the decentralized revolution, the way the world is changing. Talking about it starting from a change of the monetary system. That's what I got. Thanks for listening.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
What's up, y'all? Janice Torres here.
And I'm Austin Hankwitz.
We're the hosts of Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories, a podcast presented by iHeartRadio's Ruby Studios and Intuit QuickBooks. Join us as we speak with small business owners about the tools they use to turn their ideas into success.
From finding that initial spark of entrepreneurship to organizing payments and invoices, we've got you covered. So follow and listen to Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.